Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm very excited because I have a filmmaking team with me on Zoom right now, the team that made Across the Room and maybe more stuff I don't know about, but I've got director Melinda Hensley and writer Matt Clifford. Hey, you two.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm supposed to warn you that I'm going to throw it to you early because I don't like going on a long monologue at the a long monologue in the beginning. So I am actually talking to two people. And happy to say this is a long time coming. Your film Across the Room was in Discover Indie Film, the TV series, season six. And I think season six came out, I think around, 4 to 6 months ago. And yeah. We just have not been, because you're both so busy, we haven't had a chance to record this, right? Like,
right, yeah.
You know, you have busy, exciting lives, which I think is awesome. And you're two of my favorite people. I will just share right now in advance that I didn't know you when your film entered the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. Oh, I forgot with the introduction. It was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. And that's how it ended up in the Discover Indie Film TV series. And through that, I believe I said to Melinda on the sidewalk in front of the theater one evening after a festival screening, I was like, you know, I need more friends. I'm just going to be honest. I need more friends. Because we have these game nights. We need people who are good at game night. And she's like, oh, we're good at game night. So, so if we seem overly familiar, that's because Melinda and Matt have been to my home for game night.
Mm-hmm.
And I am proud of that. I am proud, just very proud.
Oh, we love a good game night. And that was a great game night.
It was a great time. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And there will be more soon. I promise.
All right.
Now that life is so easy. But anyhow, so people should watch Across the Room. It's hilarious. It's a great comedy, short film. So go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. It'll actually, wherever you use the Prime Video app, hopefully you use it on a big TV and not a phone. Because I kind of, obviously, as a festival programmer, I don't dig people watching movies on their phones. The mise-en-scene has to be seen on a big. But anyway, so go to a Prime Video app somewhere and type in Discover Indie Film and enjoy season six. It's in season six, episode one. Because I love to start with the comedies. I think you hook more audience members if you start with the funny than if you start with the sad, serious, and depressing. What can I say? And I don't mean to be anti-drama, but... And that is the story. So that is why you're both here. And now you've been a little warned for this. I'm just going to hit you with the how you both got involved in filmmaking and this whole crazy adventure called indie filmmaking. So who wants to go first with where you were born and when you first got interested in, not when you were born, you don't have to give your age, but where you come from and how you got involved in what I love, how Martin Short calls it, the business of show.
I love that. I'm totally cool to like start off, and Maddie, I'll probably like pass it over to you in a minute. When I was a little kid, I just liked art. I gravitated towards artistic things. I was a lefty that probably, you know, pushed me that direction. But I grew up watching a lot of Miyazaki films as a kid. So I fell in love with animation super early. I loved like just using my imagination as a kid. And that was always really fostered by my mom, which is really lovely. I didn't have interest in like, cause I started out on the screenwriting track and then got into directing that way. I wasn't particularly interested in screenwriting until 2013, which is a while past then. So before that, I was all about fiction. Like that's what I thought I was going to do. I was going to maybe like teach. I didn't know.
But you want to write novels, you're saying?
Yeah. But I also was a journalism major in undergrad. So I also kind of came equipped with that tool belt of like getting to the point, and like synthesizing things, in an interesting way. But then I came here to California. I went to grad school at USC, in between the summer, in between my first and second year, I took a, so I was in like a multi-genre, multidisciplinary program. And I took a screenwriting course with Michael Price, who is a writer for The Simpsons and the EP of F is for Family and the creator of just a really funny, really lovely guy all around. And he did something really cool. He took the class and basically made us into a writer's room. And we conceptualized a show together, and then we wrote, all of us wrote different sections of the pilot and then put it all together. And that was like the, I hadn't experienced collaboration like that before. And so it was just a whole new world to me that I really loved. And the medium of screenwriting became really intriguing to me. So I really wanted to explore that more. And then Michael invited me to a table read of The Simpsons, which was hands down one of the coolest days of my life. I remember walking out of that table read, and Michael looked at me and he's like, "Hey, how'd you feel? How'd you enjoy it?" And I was like, "If I can figure out a way to do that for a living, I might have a shot at being happy." And so I told Michael that he like doomed me to happiness. Cause after that, I left the job that I was at and told myself, I'm going to give it 6 months. I'm going to pursue TV. I'm going to see what happens. And was very supported in that endeavor. And I ended up becoming an assistant on The Young and the Restless, which is where I met Maddie. And, we both worked in this really interesting, weird world of daytime and both found out very quickly that the other was a comedy writer. And we were like, "Oh, you're secretly like, you're one of us."
And when you say assistant, was that writer's assistant?
I was the assistant to the head writer and the showrunner. So that job is typically done by two people. It was just me. And it was, such, I was taught so much in such a short period of time. And daytime is such a, it was such an amazing learning experience. I will never probably get training like that ever again anywhere else. But it was through the course of that, because for anybody listening who like doesn't know, daytime has an incredibly rigorous schedule. We would shoot Tuesday through Friday, and we would shoot 5 episodes in 4 days, sometimes 6. And there are other shows out there, like other daytime shows, that would shoot even more than us. And so I got to kind of transitioning into how I got into directing. I wanted to be on the floor just as much as I could in my off time. And I loved being in the booth. I love watching our directors handle just this massive amount of pages. And at the end of the day, my brain was like, "Oh, it's a puzzle. Like, you just have to piece it together in a way that makes sense, and you can fly through pages, and you can still figure out moments to like take the time and get really good performances." And I was like, "Huh, maybe I give that a try." And so Matt and I were writing together by this point, and I asked him if he had anything like a really short script that maybe we could just film for fun one day. And we did. And that ended up being our first short called Apology, which is a really cool, fun short. And it was just, the whole crew was just me, him, and our DP. That was it. And we shot the whole thing in like 2.5-3 hours, maybe max, on like a Sunday. And it was either like a 9-page script, but it was just, it was one of our friends, an actress that we had gotten in touch with, who is still a great friend today. And Matt was actually in that short. So you should go watch it. Cause Matt's a good actor. But anywho, that's like a really extended version of how I kind of got to where I am. I really like filmmaking. I think my first love will always be with writing, because I think there's something really special that's on the page and the way that it can communicate so much to a director, but also leave room for interpretation, is always really lovely. And same with actors too. Like it can do a lot of communicating, and I've always appreciated and loved that. But as a director, I really also love flexing that part of my brain that's putting the puzzle together, if that makes sense. But yeah, that's kind of what made me love that and love that kind of art form and gravitate that direction. And yeah, it's been a fun, and that's like kind of taking us up until Across the Room happened. So
for yeah. sure. And actually that felt kind of abbreviated. I'm going to ask, I'm going to jump way back and ask where you grew up.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. So I grew up, I was born in Florida, but when I was like 4 or 5, I moved to like middle of nowhere, Indiana. It's like 4,000 people on a good day. And we, like, there weren't too many people that I grew up around who had similar ambitions. But when I went to undergrad in Evansville, Indiana, that door kind of like cracked open for me to like meet other people who kind of wanted to pursue just writing in general and like figure out what that is. And there are several like ins and outs to the rest of that story, but like that's the main track of like how filmmaking and writing, screenwriting kind of got injected into me. So
for yeah. sure. And that's what, and what you experienced as an undergrad is what made you aim for USC graduate school in the film department.
You know,
or as a writer,
maybe it was that, maybe it was retreating into the safe womb of grad school to avoid attempting to find room.
Right. Cause as a journalism major, like
who knows anything about deferment? Yeah, no, it was, yeah, I mean, USC is USC, and I had applied to both USC and UC Irvine and ended up getting into USC and just had a great, great experience with that program. I took Sid Field's last class, who is like he coined kind of three act structure for film, for writers, for screenwriters. And I was very fortunate. And yet also like, it's a bittersweet thing. When I say his last class, I literally mean like Sid passed away while he was teaching our class. And so it like, I'm so glad that I got to experience like his wealth of knowledge and get to know him. And that was like definitely an intro to screenwriting for me in all of the, like all of the amazing ways. And that just carried on over into Michael's class, where it just kind of really, really ramped up for me. So yeah,
for sure. And I'm gonna add a comment before we jump into Matt's story, which is I think like you said, Michael, I can't remember his name, but yeah. that teacher, forget, you know, that his association with the Simpsons and stuff, the fact that he turned the class into a writer's room and showed people collaborative writing, mm-hmm. because so many screenwriters develop everything in a room alone. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I think, often some people come up with great stuff, but yeah. but in general, it is collaborative.
Yeah, and since then, like since that experience in class, I have always, I've written plenty of things like on my own, but I always like crave that feedback and that bouncing off and like that feel of a writer's room and just how that energy works. And like, we'll go over this in like what did you do the last few years or whatever, like what in that section, but it's just proof that like the people that you meet out here who are great people will come back around into your life eventually. Michael and I actually pitched a show together last year. It was wild. And, Matt also had like helped out writing and punching up the pilot. So it like ended up just being this really nice, complete circle. And I think that Michael and I are going to be like in each other's lives for a long time. So
that's amazing. I mean, I'm going to add one more thing before we jump into Matt's story, which is I don't always share this, but in fact, I've never shared this on a podcast before, but the reason I ended up in film festival programming is I was actually involved in some screenwriting competitions for about 10, 15 years before the festival thing happened. The people, because I was involved in screenwriting competitions, people kept saying, why don't you move beyond the screenwriting thing and do the film festival thing? And I kept saying, you're crazy. I don't want to do that. Turned out I love doing it. But I always kind of noticed that the best scripts had more than one writer's name on it. Like, not like a Hollywood film where you see so many names and ampersands and ands that you know it was like just gone through so many script doctors, it's disgusting. but you know, a team or a trio, I just, two minds are better than one, you know, so often. And collaboration and inspiring each other. It's just, I so frequently noticed that like the scripts that made me happiest to read had more than one name.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. I think there's something really beneficial to that, to having just another voice in the room and somebody to bounce stuff off of. And somebody, as Matt and I learned very quickly, we're two people who just don't want to make anyone mad under any circumstance whatsoever, including each other. And so we learned very quickly what the secret, like, no was, like saying no to something. At this point, we will tell each other that idea is not good. But when we first started, it was like a long pause followed by, huh. And it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I know it's bad. That's fair. Like, it got to the point.
Inherently nice people.
Yes.
It is a challenge if you're an inherently nice person. Lord knows it's always, I won't go on, but let's just say my least favorite moment is when someone walks up to me at the film festivals and goes, you know, I submitted a film that didn't get in. Can I get feedback? And the answer is, no, I don't want to tell you. What do you think the feedback is? Other films are better. Sorry.
Yeah.
And to maybe offer any kind of like solace, there are so many reasons why people are told no that have nothing to do with them or not even a lot to do with their art. It's just the time, the place, the moment, and like what it, you know, just because it doesn't get in somewhere doesn't mean it won't get in anywhere. And there's a home for most everything. I do think that there's definite on, like there's value to being honest with people when something is not good. But I also think that being told no shouldn't kill you because you're going to be told no all of the time.
That's true. And not being accepted to a film festival doesn't mean your film isn't good. It just means that there's a jury and the jury, everyone is ranking films and you know, it's a whole lot of math, really.
Yeah.
All right. Now I've said the word math. That's close enough to Matt. Matt, what?
Yeah, close enough. Yeah.
And go ahead and start with where you grew up.
I grew up in Los Angeles. I was born and raised there.
Me too.
My mom lived in Pasadena. My dad lived in Studio City. So I spent my childhood and adolescence going between both. And I remember when I was a kid, my mom took me to this theater in Hollywood on Vine to see a Neil Simon play called Laughter on the 42nd Floor. And I just remember loving it. I was just so enamored by the whole thing. I was completely pulled into this world. And even I must have been like 9. And I just thought, I don't know what it takes to actually work on something like this, but I want to be involved in something like this. This just, it just felt like, an absolute, I don't know, like an absolute trip. I was like, it felt unreal, but it was real. So I, you know, I did that. And then, you know, being an only child, I had a TV and a VCR in my room at an early age. So, you know, I would mow lawns and I'd get money from that. And I'd walk the neighbor's dog and I'd get money from that. And I'd go to at the time it was Music Plus. And they'd always have this bin of like, you can get 4 used VHS movies for $20. So I kept doing that. And I would just watch these movies and I'd watch them over and over. And I would just, it's like, I knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't know like maybe what exactly I wanted to do. So I worked at this theater company in Pasadena called the Knightsbridge Theater as a stage manager one summer, because it got me out of my mom's house.
And that's and, like as a high school kid or?
Yeah, I was 16. And they put an ad in like the local paper saying they were looking for a stage manager to help out with some of their plays. And I thought, yes, I will do that. So I went in, I met with a director and she was like, yep, that's fine. You have zero experience doing this. We're a small theater. Cool. You will not get paid. That is excellent. You can walk here from your mom's house, even better. So I did that, and it was an amazing experience. It was a wonderful experience. I'm still friends with some of these people, over 25 years later. But when I was backstage, I would watch some of these scenes. And even if they were serious plays, I would always kind of like come up with scenes like in my head, like, oh, I'd love to see these characters do this scene. But they would always be comedic scenes. Like even in Henry V, I was like, you know what? This would make for a really interesting shower scene. So I started writing like these little comedic shorts, and I would make them with my friends. And then when I went to college, I kept doing the same thing. I would write these little shorts, and I got to work with the theater department and have them performed by the theater department. And
what college?
I went to Michigan State. Yeah. I figured,
which is cool, which is very cool to do for someone who grew up here in LA, to go to Michigan State, like one of the biggest public colleges in the country.
I figured if I was going to try something entirely different, this would be the perfect time to do it, because I knew I ultimately wanted to come back to LA, but I knew I didn't want to go to college in LA. I wanted to try something just entirely different. So I went to Michigan State. I worked with the theater department a lot. I kept writing. And then after Michigan State, I was offered an internship in New York. And I took that. I was working like as a production assistant to this very odd man who had his own television show that was like an Entertainment Tonight type of thing. But he funded it on his own because he came from a wealthy family. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like I was working as his sort of personal / production assistant Monday through Friday. I got Saturday off, but then Sunday I would help him with his real estate business and show open houses.
And wait, was it like public access, or was it UHF?
It was like Warner Brothers Television. So
his show was on Warner Brothers?
Warner Brothers Television, yeah. And he would fund the whole thing himself. He had an editor. He had a camera person.
Like that WB network they had for a little while?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You could maybe find it like at 3 a.m. And so he would like cover, but he was like Entertainment Tonight, but he would cover some Broadway shows. He would cover off Broadway shows, and he would cover movie premieres. And the guy had no clue what he was doing. He was absolutely clueless. He's just an absolute trip. The rumor is that Martin Short based the Jiminy Glick character off of him, because he interviewed Martin Short one time, and that sort of kind of became the rumor. And so after that, after the internship was done, I decided that the goal was to move back to LA. So I did that, got back into the theater company that I was working with in Pasadena. And I still wanted to write, but I still worked with this theater company, and I did some like onstage work for them as well, because, you know, we got to know each other, and like you just help each other out. And but I really just kind of wanted to write. So I eventually got a job working as a writer's assistant to the co-creator of King of Queens. And he's an amazing guy. His name is David Litt. And he was just like a mentor, a role model, fabulous man. And then when King of Queens was done, he got offered a job on the Big Bang Theory as a writer and executive producer. And he brought me over to that as well. And then one of his original pilots was picked up, and he ended up staffing me on that very short-lived pilot. And after that, he decided that he just kind of wanted to retire and move to New York, which is where he was from, and his family was out there, and his parents were, you know, older, not doing so well. So it was like, that's great. I'm so glad that you are able to retire. Do you want to throw me any type of a bone here or anything? And so he like tried to do things, but also around that time I got a job working at the Young and the Restless. And I was kind of helping someone out in the accounting department, but then I was like, then I became the script and story coordinator, which is ultimately kind of what I wanted. So I could work with the script and work with the writers. And then I moved over to the script editor position on that show. And it was an amazing experience, but the whole time I was like, I'm not a soap person. And by that, I mean the people who worked on that show, a lot of them had been involved in soaps for decades and knew the entire history of not just this show, but other shows. And I had, you know, I knew the names of the shows, but I had never watched them. You know, I got excited on Thursday night when I knew, like, hey, you know, I got Seinfeld, I got Single Guy, I got Friends, I got Veronica's Closet. And then, you know what? I can follow it up with a heavy drama, ER at 10. So like that was my thing. So, but I was like, hey, I've got this job on a TV show working with writers. I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to try and learn about this show. So I did it, and I was moved over to script editor. And
go ahead and share, like, what is the official duties of script editor? Is it the last eyes on it, making sure that
it's continuity kind of, and everything? Well, at that time, soap operas were a dying breed. There were, I think, four left. So our showrunner, EP, co-head writer, he wanted to kind of change it up a bit. He wanted the dialogue to be, you know, fast-paced, get rid of the soap opera tropes. We just hired this batch of young actors, give them some fun dialogue to work with, you know, play off of what they've got. They're young, they're sexy, they can be funny. So do that. So with every script, I just kind of had to eliminate all the soap opera tropes, make the dialogue fast-paced, find comedic moments where I could, but just basically keep it fast-paced and not make it seem like a 1980s soft-lit, overly dramatic soap.
So actually a pretty crucial job of hipping it up and punching it up and modernizing the work of veterans, basically.
It was a lot, because you're doing five or six scripts a week and you've got a really tight schedule to keep on or to stay on. But then there are some writers who already kind of had that sort of vibe to their scripts. So that really helped too. I could go through those quickly. But yeah, I learned from each of those writers that I worked with. They're an absolutely amazing group of writers. Like Melinda told you, we met on that show and we really couldn't tell people that comedy was what we wanted to do. So we would almost like have to, you know, talk about it in the corner, talk about it in like secret afterwards and not let people know. And so we started doing that. And like she said, we started working on these short films, and I had an idea for a feature, but I was like stuck with certain things. And then I talked about it with her and we ended up co-writing this feature. And basically we've become, we just sort of became writing partners. It just sort of happened. We're like, let's just write this. I have an idea for this. You want to work on this? And it just is, you know, years later, we're still doing it.
Excellent. And yeah. And the first thing you shot is the one Melinda mentioned?
The first thing we shot together, what we shot something called Bad News Pairs. She produced it. She helped produce it. She helped us get the sets ready. She helped organize everything for it. So she was the producer on that one. And then the next one she wanted to direct. So she directed it. And yeah. And so basically everything that like we've kind of co-written, she has directed. And we've got another project that we have co-written, but she's going to let me co-direct it with her. So hats off to her.
Was that a special negotiation, or
what was that?
Was it a special negotiation, or was it just something that the time has come?
No, I think, well, specifically, Maddie, I don't want to take words out of your mouth.
No, go for it.
But with this new script in particular, which we've had it done for a little while and have kind of gotten attachments to it, and then things haven't worked out. Like with the pandemic, it just kind of a lot went a lot of baggage came with it, but I would listen to, like, Matt and I would be going over moments and we were like looking in different places in LA to like shoot certain scenes. And Matt would be like, oh, well, I really like, what if we saw like this, or like, what if we saw like this direction, or like on this line, this. And I was like, you sound like a director. You sound like a director. And this is really like this, like the script is really close to your, like really close to your heart. It means a lot to you. And I feel like it like at the moment, it just made the most sense. And especially since you talked about it in such a visual way, which I think was not something you'd done with the other scripts that we did. And I also think that, I mean, Matt and I would go through, editing together, like with our, we would give notes to our editor together, obviously. But so like, that was like its own visual kind of way. But I think that, yeah, this one is just designed to be like co-directed and it'll be fun.
And I mean, I have to tip my figurative hat that, because that's just like a lovely thing to hear, because very often people get attached to roles and don't want to change situations and stuff. And just to say, you know what, this one, it feels right to co-direct. I think that says a lot about your collaboration.
Yeah. Cause we had almost like established this sort of routine. Like we would write the script, but she would be the director of the partnership. And then, but with this one, yeah, like she kind of said, it was like, we would talk about certain scenes and I'd be like, you know, kind of describing a certain scene that I had in my mind in such great detail. And yeah, she basically said, do you just want to direct it with me? And you know, if she's got the patience for it.
I mean,
I've
earlier
directed anything before,
and the earlier setup, it's almost, I mean, it's not a direct analogy to it, but it almost sounds like the Coen brothers, you know, how the Coen brothers,
well,
basically
that
co-wrote and co-directed, but one took the producer credit and one took the director credit. Like,
yeah.
We wrote together, but like on Across the Room, it's written by Matt Clifford and it's directed by Melinda Hensley. And it feels like you collaborate more and then you go ahead and just make, you know, divide up the credits.
Yeah.
For the sake of the way credits are normally done.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's so much that we've both do that's like seen and the things that are not seen, you know, like we cover a lot of ground and really, I couldn't imagine doing any of the projects that I've done without him in multiple capacities, you know? And so I think that that just makes us and the project stronger. And I also will say that like, I would highly encourage anybody who's in like a creative position or like a director position or a writer position to step outside that comfort zone, step outside that label that you've placed on yourself, because I, hands down, being a director has made me a better writer. And being a producer has made me a better writer, and being, I've not been in front of the camera yet. I don't really have plans to, but like, you know, I can only assume that doing that would also make you a sharper writer. If you learn the different blind spots that every position has, you learn how to step in and like prevent fires before they happen. Like it just makes you, and it makes you way more sympathetic to like the stuff that other people are trying to deal with and trying to parse out in their brains creatively or otherwise. So I can't recommend that enough. Even if it's something that like, you aren't sure if it's going to like be good, who cares? Like it's worth it to try it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And you made me think of then every time I've heard a person say that acting is easy. Like it, a lot of people say, oh, everyone acts in life. Every director probably should at least take an acting class and realize just how unbelievable, particularly on camera. Some people can act, and then as soon as you put a camera on them, they freeze. It's just awkward and weird. It's the least comfortable thing in the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to not respect it means you just haven't tried it.
Yeah. I've done stand-up, and I think that that's probably as close as I'll get to doing in front of camera work. And that's just because I already know that I lack that skill set. And I wouldn't want to be in anybody's way, but to take a class would be definitely fun. I think just to really figure out how we have friends that are actors. So like listening to them read a script and like listening to them like make suggestions, and actors on the day when we're like on set, making suggestions like fit, like respecting that in the best way possible and figuring out, like I said, kind of how just they're parsing out stuff in their brain. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think a very healthy percentage of actors would turn to someone who's tried stand up and say, oh my God, that's scary as fuck.
Yeah. Because like an actor in front of the camera, you're there with just like, you know, a crew, the camera, you mess up, it's take two. When you're doing stand-up, you've got an audience there, all eyes on you. Like, if you mess up and it's a stand-up, that is your own original material. So it's like, it's I've never done it. And so hats off to the people that do it. It takes a lot of courage to get up there and do that. Because that's, you're doing your own material.
It really does. And it's, it is its own beast, but Lord knows, I think, well, not all stand-ups make good actors, but
that's true,
there certainly is a nice crossover.
Yes.
And even the best stand-ups have bad shows. They've got horror stories.
I was going to say, look at like Mulaney's a primary example of that. Like he's done plenty of excellent work in the last couple of years, especially in the voice acting circuit, but like his show, and through no fault of his own, there's plenty of other factors at play there, but just like even really funny people get saddled with really unfortunate projects.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And there's not a single stand up alive that hasn't died on stage more times than they've killed. And
yeah,
whatever. We could talk about it for a while, but we can move on. So
yes.
we can relive that trauma. It's fine.
We can relive all kinds of things, but
I'm
more pertinent to you too.
While we're at it.
so where in the collaboration, when does Across the Room pop in? Across the Room, I know it as, it was a film that was at our COVID infested year of November 2020. It was in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, so that was the year that we actually did manage to have an outdoor masked in-person filmmakers mixer, I believe, that year. But all the screenings and all the Q&As were all virtual. But I assume that means you probably shot it before the plague hit?
Yes.
We did. I think we shot it in, was it October?
October, November, like end of October, I think, beginning of November, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 2019.
November, yeah.
2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, when life just seemed perfectly normal.
Right. Yeah.
Perfectly.
And then, so actually, did you actually finish the edit and have it completed before?
Yep.
Oh, so you had that awful timing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, the funny thing was, so Nate Hackey and Rosie Grace, we were going to do, they had Rideshare, which premiered alongside us, I believe. At one point, we were double billed. And it was really funny that we ended up double billed with y'all, because we initially wanted to rent out a theater and do a like double date screening of both shorts for like all of our friends and like inviting industry folks and whatever. And we put down like the deposit on the theater and we were so excited and we'd sent out invites. And then it was like, oh, okay, maybe we'll like push to March. And then it was like, oh, maybe we'll push till September. And then we just understood that it was probably never going to happen. So you like, but you guys eventually brought our shorts together, which is wild.
Accidentally. I remember so clearly because I had no idea that you two knew Nate and Rosie. And in fact, I'll just fill in. Nate Hapke had a film, I think, at Sherman Oaks Film Festival as early as, I think, 2018 ish. His first film, or the first short I know him for. He's made a billion shorts. But and then yeah, and I believe it was when we were doing a Zoom Q&A during the plague that yes. I said to you two, oh, by the way, your film is in a block with this really fun film. Excuse me. Yeah, Rideshare. And you're like, we know the people who made that. And we won it. And then you mentioned the screening. And yeah, I was going to go to that screening at LA Independent or whatever, right?
Yep, that was it.
I think I might have been, like, you had tickets been pre-sold. I think I might have bought a ticket that got refunded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had the tickets up for sale and everything. Yeah.
It was all prepared. We were really excited. But alas, but hey, things work out the way they're supposed to. We actually, Matt and I were both just at their engagement party in Baltimore over the New Year. So congrats to them.
Yeah, literally on New Year's Eve.
Literally, yeah. On New Year's Eve. It was fun.
Yeah. So yeah, they're engaged.
They're engaged. I think I saw that on the Instagram.
Yes. Yeah, they posted a lot of pictures.
From my honeymoon when I was looking at my phone. But anyway, I should not have been looking at my phone. But I was mostly reading books. But anyway.
Oh, nice.
I remember seeing that. I was like, oh, I haven't sent them a really nice congratulatory note. So I'm a heel. Anyway. So that was very cool. And it was so cool, yeah, to have Sherman Oaks Film Festival bring your films together like that, like they were meant to be.
Sure.
Indeed. Yeah.
And both are really funny. So anyhow, since then, you've done some more, or? I know you two are always busy.
So the film that we were referencing earlier, the one that we're co-directing, it's called Do Us Part. It's about an older couple who both get diagnosed with like dual terminal diagnoses. And I know, real bright. And they,
it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. No, and they decide, oh, since we're like both going to go out, we're going to go out together. And the middle, like they attempt to go through to like a dealing with death, like support group. And then they're like, this is terrible. We fucking hate this. And so the like middle chunk of the short is them trying and failing all these ways to kill each other at the same time. And then at the end, it's very much I'm not going to give anything away, but it's very much like learning about how to deal with, like things that you can and can't prepare for and reaching out and like forming friendships and like seeing how you learn to live. And it's really like the stuff that we've done previously is like very like cute and fun, and we love a good fun comedy and that's what we excel in. But this one is very like, I don't know. It like tugged at us a little bit. It's good.
And does it fall under, not that labels are important, but you feel like it's dark comedy?
Yeah. I think an elderly couple trying to wander into the ocean with ankle weights on and then feeling like the water's too cold. And also there's a child building a sandcastle so they can't do it. Like that's like peak. That's pretty good dark comedy to me. I think it would fall under that heading.
Yeah. We tried not to make it too morbid though. We tried to like use the kind of the tone that we keep all of our material.
For sure. A healthy dose of like rom-com in there too. Like it's very in its own.
So yeah, that's the one we're going to hopefully co-direct if we get around to it.
Yeah.
It's certainly a love story.
Yes. It is. We were able to get a couple of actors attached to it and hopefully depending on their schedule. So hopefully we'll be able to do that.
All right, call me an idiot, but I was about to say Across the Room is clearly a love story. It could be the same couple just 40 years later, just thinking.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Across the Room is the prequel.
I could see that. I see that as the meeting point. I like that.
That's actually really interesting. I kind of like that. I really like that.
Just being silly. So
you're 10%. We'll cut you.
I need nothing but the satisfaction of seeing other people achieve what they want. So anyhow, where should we go from here? What anything that needs to be mentioned or added to?
I mean, so Maddie and I still have our road trip rom-com movie, the first feature we ever wrote together. It was kind of that same, a little bit of like the victim of the pandemic in a way, where we had a director attached and we were kind of shopping it around. And then people were like, no, thanks. We're not taking things at the moment. But those same people have recently, like the production companies and things like that, have recently hit us up to be like, oh, remember that the thing? So we're still, it's still very much like, it will happen when it happens. It's such a fun movie, and it was just a blast to write. And it was the thing that made me, like, I hadn't written a feature before, and it made me kind of like fall in love with, I was a big like TV person, but this made me really love the structure of a feature and how fun it could be. So yeah, that's something that we're like trying to figure out, trying to.
And any temptation to pull 5 to 10 pages out of it and do a proof of concept kind of short, or because I just see a lot of that. I'm not saying it's a good idea, and I'm not saying it works, but I see a lot of it.
We have discussed that. We have actually talked about it. We've actually talked about using one of the actors from across the room.
As
one of the male leads, and he read the script, and he's, you know, if something happens with it, he would love to make it with us.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's excellent. And you both are still keeping quite busy. I mean, I feel a little sorry. Oh, this is a mean thing to say, but I'm a mean person. It's mean towards the rest of the world. Like when you two talk about your careers and working on daytime on TV and stuff, I mean, it's many steps ahead of a lot of other people I meet on the festival circuit. You know, I feel like you both have a really good toehold and understanding of the industry.
That's very kind.
But we also really did learn a lot working on that show. When you're making 5 to 6 episodes a week, you really get to learn a lot about every single department. Which I think really has helped Melinda too, because the two short films that she has directed, well, she's directed more than two. The two that she and I have worked on, I think because of YNR, that fast pace and the organization, she carried that over to her individual projects. And like across the room was, I think, 11 to 12 pages. And she hammered that out in about 4 hours. So, you know, we worked closely with the directors at YNR, with the directing staff. We really did learn a lot from that environment, even though it wasn't like our genre of choice. It's pretty amazing what those folks do on a day.
Yeah, and what you did in 4 hours, I'll add, I mean, across the room is actually subtle comedy. And it's challenging performances, I think. Mm. And you got everything you needed in 4 hours. That's kind of remarkable.
Yeah, well, and the fact that all of the actors, except for one, are also daytime folks. So that, I mean, that also just speaks to their ability to like digest something, understand what you want, and deliver. And so I got to, I mean, I recognize, and I told our DP, who is now an astounding director, Jordan McKittrick, is lovely, and he will still like DP for us like every once in a while, just because he likes hanging out with us on set. But like, if you have a good DP, you have everything, because he takes my garbled nonsense of like storyboards and like makes them make sense. But he totally understood like what I wanted the story to be there. And I only wanted one or two shots that were like visually, I don't want to call them trick shots, because that's not what they were. Like it's so in across the room, there's like a rack focus from the wine glass over to the table that's literally across the room. And then a couple of like angled shots and things like that. But nothing, I understood that at the end of the day, the story was paramount. And also the script is really good. And I always want to cater to the script itself and serve that story, especially in a comedy setting. I think that comedies can be visually beautiful. I think that people kind of forget that. But I also think that like serving the story is just so important. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think like instead of trick shots, you just mean like things that were more complicated for the camera department.
Yes, exactly. Like something that would take a little longer to set up, something you might have to do one or two takes of, something that doesn't always involve the actors directly. So like an object or things like that, or timed out placement, things like, you know, things along those lines.
And it really pushes that first AC whose job is focus, right? Like everyone thinks it's all in the DP, but
I was going to say, it was just on across the room. The entire crew was me, Matt, Jordan, and Alexandra, who did sound for us.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was all.
Right. So he was your DP is responsible for focus.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Which, and I assume in my mind, it's not a super bright set. So he's a clear pro.
Yeah. The entire thing was lit with like one or two pieces that he brought. I wanted that initially because I really liked that warm romantic feeling, that kind of like low lit candlelight without candlelight kind of look. We got to film at Maggiano's in the Grove. Rest in peace. It's no longer there. So that, like,
that's too bad.
I know, the short feels like some kind of weird time capsule now that it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, my friend used to be, I believe, a manager there. But anyway, who cares? So one of those out of work actors. Oh, I shouldn't say it. I'm such a, see, I told you I'm not nice.
For how often we were there, we probably know them.
Yeah.
Oh, was Y&R near there? No?
Oh, so CBS Television City is right.
Right, that's so where Y&R was at Television City.
Yeah, we would walk right through the gate and, like, get a glass of wine there after work. Like, we got to kind of know everybody who worked there a little bit. And that's how we got the room. I had initially asked one of the bartenders who we know. I was like, hey, can we, like, rent a room upstairs for a short? Like, it's just going to be one night. We'll do one rehearsal one day and not bring any equipment, but then, you know, next day we'll shoot. And he was like, you guys have been coming here for like 2.5 years. Like, it's free. Like, you can just use it, which was so gracious and very nice. Yeah. But yeah, what a place, what a weird place. Maggiano's.
Well, when we stop recording, I've got a Television City story to share. Yes. And I got to talk to Matt about Music Plus because
yes,
I think, I grew up in Studio City as well, so I think we might be talking about the same Music Plus.
Yeah.
Which is now, like, I think it's a Trader Joe's now, but anyway.
Yeah, you get your wristband if you want to buy tickets to a rock concert and wait in the line.
Oh, yeah, because the Ticketmaster was that little thing in the corner, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, you do that. And, yeah, I remember, like, waking up early on Saturday mornings because I wanted to, like, get in line to get the wristband to buy my REM tickets. Yeah, so weird.
It's madness. It's madness. All right. Well, this was absolutely tons of fun. And before we go, I warned you about this. Do you want to name websites or social media handles that people should check out?
Yeah, I'm on the Dumb Bird app until it sinks. So I'm on Twitter. You can find me at Melinda K, and Melinda has two L's. So I'm mostly active on there. I think that's like my biggest social. I'm on Instagram a little bit, but you can find me on Twitter. And from there,
Melinda with the letter K at the end?
Yes. Yep, that's me.
All right.
Just look at Melinda, it's Lisa.
That'll be a clickable link at the bottom. And it's just Twitter, huh? You mastered Twitter. I can never figure it out.
Everything's on fire all the time. I mean, you just got to pick which one you want to warm yourself next to. Like, that's kind of how I feel. But I will say I've met some of the best people on Twitter, people who have turned into wonderful, wonderful friends since the pandemic. Like, just absolutely great humans. So it is good for something.
It's good for a lot. It's good for a lot. It's not, yeah. People make a big deal about what's in the news, but come on. It's not, I don't know. I'm trying to downplay it in my mind right now.
Yeah.
Because I see no reason to, like, cancel the film festival Twitter accounts. Like, we just think to them anyway.
Just write it out. That's my thing. I'm,
This too shall pass.
This too shall pass. Indeed.
We can only hope.
All right. And Matt, is there a website or social media that people should check out, or that I'll make a clickable link?
My Instagram is, I believe it's at the Red Dog, just because my last name is Clifford. And I grew up with an Irish Setter Golden Retriever mix. So I grew up with, like, a red dog. So it's at the Red Dog.
Excellent. That's Instagram.
What was that?
And that's Instagram.
I have a Twitter. Melinda, what's my Twitter? Is it like at one Harvey Root or what is it?
Yeah, you have a Twitter in theory, kind of like in the same way I have an Instagram in theory.
It exists. Yeah, I think it's like, what is it? Is it, do you know
it's, yeah, it's, I think it's one Harvey Root.
At one Harvey Root.
Yeah. Well, since you don't update it, I won't. And they even broke our ability to sync them, right? I think so. I admit that my Twitter for the last, my personal Twitter for the last, I don't know how many years, it was just links from, it was just syncing it to Instagram anyway.
Yeah.
So no reason to check out my Twitter or Instagram, which I never name anyway. No one can know what it is. You have to be sneaky. And my name is so generic. Good luck. All right. Well, both of those will be click. And is there, and I guess the answer is no, or you would have mentioned it, but there's not like a, you haven't made a website for the film, like a home for the films of the collaboration or a YouTube or any of that crap.
No, not quite yet. I think we're at a place where like, so we've only done so many together. And also I recently directed my first dramatic short, which was really interesting. My friend Steve Rosenberg wrote it. Wonderful writer. But I'm also currently like in that stage of still cutting together my reel and like learning what that looks like. And so it feels weird to try and establish between the two of us to try and establish like a website with a certain feel or brand to it without.
Understood. And by the way, you definitely could have mentioned directing this drama of when we're like, what have you done since Across the Room?
I mean, we'll see. I'm so excited. We are picture locked. It's called The Point. I'm so jazzed about it. It's going to be great. This was the first short that like we got to spend money on, and I'm really excited. And so the point will be great. We're picture locked. We're going to do color correction. It's going to have a score. It's going to be great.
I was on set. I can attest. It's going to look fantastic.
We shot it. We shot it the weekend of my birthday, which is September 1st. And if you blocked that portion of this past year out of your brain, it was 107 degrees.
And we shot it in she shot it in La Cañada.
Yes.
And the actors were in one room that did not have air conditioning.
Yes. They had a holding room that did, but the room that they were performing in did not. All of us melted. It was insane. And the crazy thing is, like, looking at the footage, you cannot tell. And that is such an attestment to like the actors' performances and to our amazing hair and, Dana.
And hair and makeup.
Hair and makeup, which was me.
Which was you.
Which was me. And by me, I mean like I ran around with a blotter in like a fanny pack bag to make sure that nobody overheated and then would like touch them up. Cause it was, we had a cast of two and they were, well, three, we had a cast of two and they were both men. And then there's a short little bit with a female actress in there, but she was in and out in like an hour. But yes, it just, what a wild time that was. I'm really excited to like show people. And Matt was a wonderful script supervisor on it. It was great.
So.
And just for fun, I think we've probably gone long enough, but for fun, I'm going to mention that I can't help but remember the moment. And of course, I'm getting to see your faces. Everyone's just hearing our voices. But when Melinda complimented Matt's acting,
mm-hmm.
he gave a big head shake. No, but are you ever going to make him do it again?
Oh, gosh. Never.
He's shaking his head. No.
I would never. Yeah, no, I would.
I can see it, though. I think I can see a bit of a.
Little
performance down there. Even the way you're shaking your head, no, I don't want to act.
Look at that.
What are you gonna do?
But no,
he's very cute. What can I say? He's very cute. I you gotta you're photogenic.
We love a swimmer vibe. But no, he I'm sorry, Maddie, we won't embarrass you. But no, I would never make him act again if he didn't want to. But in all the stuff that I've seen that he's done, he's very good.
You're well, if that makes you a better writer, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'll stop prodding you two and I'll do the wrap up spiel, which is thank you for listening. This is the Discover Indie Film podcast, where basically it's a podcast that started because Q&As at the film festivals are actually ours are long. Ours are around 15-ish minutes. But that's still really not enough time for someone to talk about their work. And honestly, I just started the podcast because I wanted people to be able to share their full stories. And then out of the podcast was born the TV series, because everyone came onto this podcast and talked about their shorts. And most of the time, the shorts just ended up on YouTube or Vimeo, and all the features ended up on streaming services. And I said to a bunch of short filmmakers, you want to put a bunch of shorts together and we'll try to get it on Amazon? And no one said no. Like, there was no no's. You're in season 6, episode 1 of the Discover Indie Film TV series. Season 7 just came out, actually. And season 8 is already, like, ready. And it's all dance films, if you can believe that. Because I got hooked up with... I got invited to be a guest programmer at a dance film festival in England. And so I said to that head programmer, well, you want to take over your own season of Discover Indie Film and make it all dance films from EDIF, the Exeter Dance International Film Festival? And of all the weird things, in the center of EDIFF is DIF for Discover Indie Film. It's like meant to be. So anyway, I don't know why I'm bothering going on the whole story. So anyway.
No, that's amazing. I was a dancer for 10 years. So like that truly intrigues me. Yeah.
And isn't the combination of dance and film one of the most special things in the world?
Magical, yeah. It's learning how to synchronize yourself with like the world around you and learning layers of music. And yeah, it's beautiful.
And honestly, Hollywood always does, you know, dance numbers, but it's not modern and artistic dance where you're seeing how beautiful the human form can be. And then it's being shot by an artist who is being innovative with camera. Like, I can't get enough of these dance films. So anyhow, big tangent there. So if you want to learn about the podcast and the TV series it gave birth to, you can go to discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIF Wins. I mentioned how Melinda and Matt's film Across the Room was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. You can learn about that festival we hold every November if you go to shermanoaksff.com. And it's at Sherman Oaks FF on social media. Its sister festival we hold every June is Film Invasion Los Angeles. So you can learn about that one at filminvasionla.com. And it's at Film Invasion LA on social media. I will brag that both festivals are in the top 100 best rated worldwide on Film Freeway. Hey. So actually, out of 12,000 film festivals on planet Earth, two of the top 100... you know, I'm involved in. Yeah. I kind of weird. So anyway, but it's really nice. And it means we get so many great films. So anyway, that is the story with the festivals. And then the last thing to mention is, because I'm glutton for punishment and cannot abuse my time. There's just no limit to my abusing my ability to waste time, not waste time, to not respect my need for personal time. People should just go to watchhitv.com. Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said TV High. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV High, as in watchtvhigh.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to at watchtvhigh. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast. And you'll learn about a streaming service / smart TV app that is devoted to films that are great to watch when you're high. I want everyone to know drugs should be used responsibly. I live somewhere where marijuana is legal. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do marijuana where it's illegal, but I'm just saying I have friends in recovery and not everyone should do drugs and you should not take drugs lightly. But if you're a person if you're a person who can use marijuana and it doesn't have any negative effects on your life, you should really go to watchhitv.com because there is some good shit to watch when you're high. And yeah, that's all I got to say about that. All right. Amazing. Lynn and Matt, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you everyone for listening.